This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday. It's 28th of February. Oh, my God. Hey, look who's here. It's Gord Laws.
Hello, everybody.
And Ben Karpinski.
Hello, hi.
And I don't know where Mubs is.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's not there. I gotta say, I had a very scary entry to work today.
Why? What happened?
Well, I was riding up to the entrance of my bike, as I do every day. It's during the work days. And this rat, but like a big rat.
How big?
Sure, Gareth.
Big as a chicken?
Maybe not as tall, but it was definitely as ominous as a big chicken.
As ominous as a chicken, you say?
It crossed the road. It crossed the road, but not like in a must get there.
Did you ask it why in the spirit of
chickens? I didn't have time. I was too scared. But he crossed the road in such a manner as to say, yeah, what up? Who wants this? Just a little rat swagger.
Oh, right. So like almost like he was the king and that you were in his territory.
I mean, I got to say, if it wasn't for a car being in front of me and behind me, that could have been it. The rat could have jumped me, stolen my bike.
Yeah.
Ridden off into the highway.
Dude, Cape Town rats are another story. That was one of the things, that was one of like the really eye-opening things about moving to Cape Town for a little while was the rats.
They have bigger rats than we do?
Dude, their rats are proper. They're in gangs. They have like a structured society. They're tenants of many of, they're landlords of many of the buildings. I had like an underground parking space in my apartment building in CBD, which is like hen's teeth. It's like having a parking is better than having an apartment.
Yeah.
And I remember taking my car for a service and they said, you know that your insulating foam on your engine's not there. And I'm like, oh, really? Shit, I don't know much about cars. So I just was like, that sounds expensive. They're like, oh, not really. Besides, it's not that important. It's really just foam. You can replace it if you want to.
But the rats will just eat it.
The rats will eat it again. I'm like, what do you mean again?
Well, like, my mother took her car in for a service the other day and there was a dead rat somewhere in the undercarriage. Yeah. It was in between panels and it had died there.
I took it in as well because the windscreen wiper, the thing that squirts water on your windscreen, that wasn't working. And they were like, oh, no, the rats have just chewed through your cable to get at the water.
They'll eat anything.
But they're huge, dude. They're the size of small badgers.
Jeez.
I'd rather the badger in my surroundings than a rat.
I reckon a badger's a pretty badass thing.
Yeah,
as well.
Sure, but I mean, it's a badger at least. I mean, it's just it's exotic.
Yeah, it's
interesting.
More interesting. I wonder if we've got, because I know Johannesburg has like enormous insects, I wonder if we've got any kind of world records. I remember that someone told me once that cane rats who live in KZN, you know, they live in the sugar cane.
Mm. Yeah, they also run the fields there.
And those things grow. I mean, they get big.
Yeah.
They get like the size of a rabbit.
Almost a capybara.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, the ones in Cape Town, I swear, with no exaggeration, they must get close to the size of a loaf of bread. And they're seriously big rats.
That is huge.
Yeah, they're probably not as like pudgy, probably not as broad, but that size, yeah.
So there's lots to get into today. We'll start off with some news, the five things you need to know a little bit later on. And we've got, I had such a great conversation yesterday. You know Jeremy Thompson from Sky News?
Yeah. So this guy walked in yesterday. I wasn't expecting him and he just said hello. And straight away, I heard the music. I heard everything.
Right. He's got this amazing voice and,
you know. Nice guy.
Yeah, very cool guy. Anyway, he and I spoke for like an hour and 15 minutes and you can hear that interview probably early next week. And just, again, hearing someone who's, it was like when I had Alistair Sparks on and, you know, he sort of, I think he died a year and a half ago, but before he died, I had him in here and we were talking about the history of South Africa. And, you know, this is a guy who had been in parliament when D.F. Malan and H.F. Verwoerd were there and someone who had an understanding where the whole apartheid system started. He watched it develop. He went through the 60s and 70s with this system and reporting on it in the free media. Then he got to obviously the 80s and 90s and all the changes that happened and then watched how the ANC became captured and everything else post 94 and had some interesting things to say about this, what he called the long view of history. And, you know, talking to Jeremy Thompson, this is a guy who was in Kuwait during that first Gulf War. He was here in South Africa during the 90s when we were going through our transitions and freedom and democracy came. And he ended off his career on Brexit and Trump. And just to hear his appreciation for how, Because we tend to live in the moment, right? All of us do. We can't help it. And you think that the thing that's going on today is the worst or the best thing that's ever happened. Yeah. And in reality, it's nowhere near
I love that
historically
expression.
As significant as anything else. And then you kind of look at the long picture and you get this idea of how these are just little blips on the radar.
That's such a cool expression, the long view of history. I love that.
Yeah, but
does he reckon the world is headed in a good or a bad direction? Did you ask whether, I suppose we'll have to wait and see and listen to the interview, but does he think things are better in general or that we're going down the toilet?
Well, you know, journalists like him are always reticent to give an opinion. You really have to draw it out of them because they like to look at things. And, you know, he was explaining how in the UK they've got very strict rules about being objective as is possible, because obviously every human being is subjective, but trying not to give editorial. In other words, it's not his job as a broadcaster in the UK. You're not allowed to make it about you. It's not about your opinions. It's and I think there's something very healthy about that when it comes to journalism. It's something a lot of people in this country struggle with when and that's why we've got so few really good journalists.
They do teach it here. I did a bit of journalism.
Yeah, they teach it here, but how many people put it into practice? I mean,
there's
even
methods of keeping your opinion out. There's like formulae that you can run your content through.
Apart from the handful of really credible journalists in South Africa, and they really are just a handful, there are a swathe of them who think that the reason they're employed is because people care about their opinions.
Yeah.
In order to become an influencer or an opinion leader or any of those things, thought leader is the new buzz term that people use, you really have to first establish credibility. And so someone like him is always a bit careful to give their opinion because every time you give your opinion, you stand the chance of having your credibility etched away.
Yeah.
Yep. As opposed to if you're a journalist whose objective was trying to portray the facts and as honest a way as possible and not bullshit the audience, your credibility will grow.
Yeah, and you become a useful source of information to just about everybody,
right,
as opposed to an echo chamber of agreement for some people.
Yeah, correct. And this is what we were talking about largely, is this emergence of fake news and how he said that a lot of people in television and radio in particular are hired because they got a lot of followers on Twitter now or because they look good on TV. And he said that doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting the best information. And this was not him being some bitter old guy who's left TV, because I brought it up. He didn't ask to talk about that. And the short answer, Gord, is I think, objectively, the facts would show that humans now are living better than humans ever did in the past.
Yeah.
All humans.
Yeah.
People tend to have a very, again, I bring up history because I'm a student of history. It frustrates me no end that first and foremost, very few out of the total number of people who get to matric in South Africa, and that's a small number, ever study history because they couldn't be bothered because they think history is politicized, and politicians will try to politicize history. But if you don't learn about where you come from, first of all, where you come from, second of all, where your country comes from or your people come from, and third of all, what the whole history of humanity is. And again, I cannot recommend enough a brilliant book that I wish I'd read, wish it was available when I'd studied history at school, a book called Sapiens.
I actually just bought it. It's in my queue. I'm reading it after Harry Potter 6. I just bought it.
Yuval Noah Harari. And this guy has written two books. He's got Sapiens and then Homo Deus, which is kind of a follow-on to that. And it's a projection of where humanity might go. But if you don't read that book, I don't think you have any idea of all the concepts that are floating around in conversation and politics, and you know, there's a lot of uninformed crap that goes out there because people just couldn't be bothered to read.
Yeah.
It's fine to have opinions if you have educated, literal opinions or literary opinions, let's say, not literal. That word gets abused all the time, but a lot of people are based,
it literally does.
A lot of people base whatever opinions they've got on just pulling crap from the sky or hearing
or
what
just,
someone else says.
Yeah, exactly.
Easiest thing to do.
You can literally bestow somebody else with enough credibility in your own eyes that whatever they say, you will cite as a source or a fact.
Correct.
I know this to be true because Jenny McCarthy said it on her anti-vaccination blog.
Right.
Yes. So, yes, I assume she's done research.
I mean, this is Jenny McCarthy,
who's
most famous for, like, getting her tits out on TV.
Yeah, she was the hostess of the dating show on MTV. Right. But I read...
Good show, though.
It was actually a pretty good show. Carmen Electra took over when I was like 15. I used to watch that stuff. It was great. But I just got Sapiens and I'm dying to read it. It's next in my queue. But I read a book as well passed on to me by a good friend called Alan Adams, who's a very bright guy who just knows of history.
And it was called Alan Adams the funny guy?
The comic, yeah.
He's brilliant.
An incredibly smart dude and very well educated.
We
anyway,
should get him in here.
Yeah, he's a brilliant guy. Go on and get him in. It'll be funny and interesting. And this book that he loaned me, which I've subsequently tried to find, I gave it back to him and I've subsequently tried to find it everywhere, was called A Very Short History of the World, not to be confused with A Brief History of Time, written by Dr. Geoffrey Blainey, who was the head of anthropology at Melbourne University.
Right.
And just also kind of like talks about this humanity as if a small group of tree-dwelling simians, and then, you know, the spread throughout the world and how the changing water levels isolated population groups, and basically just the story of people. And where there's not information or there's this dispute, he would say, okay, so for the next 150,000 years, we're not entirely sure. Here are the three theories. I think this one, and tells it like a story. And right. It was just mind-blowingly fascinating. That and Bill Bryson's A Short History of
terrific.
Everything.
Yeah, that's terrific.
You've got A Brief History of Time, A Very Short History of the World, and A Short History of Everything. All three are worth reading and by different people.
And because they all cover very, very different fields as well. But they're tremendously helpful because they give you that long view of history.
Yeah.
And there aren't enough people who are interested in that stuff. Unfortunately, a lot of people think education is getting a degree so you can get a job or learning a skill so you can earn a living.
School also gives it a bad reputation, though, because learning history in school is often, unless you're lucky enough to have a really good teacher, because a good teacher makes all the difference with most subjects. But for the most part, learning history, it's presented as boring, and you've got to memorize facts and names, and it's really like learning lists, and it's not an exciting story. But, you know, reading these kind of books, you're not like punishing yourself to go back in time and redo homework.
No, it's the most
fascinating.
They are fascinating.
The books that sell well will typically sell well because they're not only well researched, but also well written and interesting to read and captivating. So a captivating history book or a captivating book on science or space, that for me is like,
it's amazing.
It's an absolute jewel.
All right. So I got these pictures from Oki, who listens to us out in Namibia, with a rat that, that someone pulled out of their car. It was like stuck in between the panels as well. This thing is a big rat. And he says they sold this car with 5,000 Ks on the clock, and it had this rat in it. I mean, that's incredible.
What sort of car is it? I can't quite tell.
I can't tell either. Yeah, but this is just the panels.
Oh, it's been stripped,
it.
Right?
It's a Maserati.
Ben.
Oh, it's a Toyota Camry.
Preferred it when it was a Maserati, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It's not a particularly big rat, but it is a dead one that could probably be quite stinky.
Well, maybe that's just one piece of him.
Someone says we have loads of rats in Braamfontein. We call them kittens.
Sure.
Raphael in Cape Town says, good morning, guys. Thanks for the great discussion with Jack Parrow yesterday. Zero fucks given. Yeah, he's just such a good guest. And I've had Jack Parrow in here about three or four times. He's the gift that keeps on giving. Kind of interview where you actually just sit down with the guy, you have a cup of tea in front of you. Before you know it, it's, you know, an hour and a half later, and you're still laughing. He's just terrific. Mm. I want to throw this in too. Guess what happened on this day 20 years ago? Because it's that long ago.
No way.
Yeah.
Titanic.
This movie was released. Can you believe that? 20 years ago today. It broke all box office records at the time. James Cameron, the director, scooped up a bunch of Oscars. It made an already semi-famous Leo DiCaprio more famous.
And there was definitely space on that floating thing
for him, and
always.
Kate.
And
yeah.
Kate Winslet. Yeah. 10 different ways they could have both fit on there.
But again, you know, a lot of people think that the Titanic movie is an actual portrayal of what happened with the Titanic, that there were really a Rose and Jack. And, you know, there weren't.
No.
And again, if you just bothered to pick up a book or even watch a documentary. I mean, these days there's no excuse to be stupid. There really isn't.
They did recreate the look and feel of it quite accurately.
No, that was great.
A lot of effort went into
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, there were the rich people and the poor.
No, the decorations and the layout. And
yeah. No, they got the ship. They were very, what is the word? Faithful to history in respect of how the ship looked.
I tell you.
And what kind of society you know,
I reckon there was a story between some well-to-do woman looking for a bit of rough below the decks.
Oh, there was definitely rough below the decks. There had to be, surely.
Definitely looking for that. There was many a story. Many of them went to the Titanic because of it.
Yeah, you'd be a...
It was like, well, I'm going on the Titanic. There's promise of rough under the decks. I'm taking it.
I think that might have been like...
And Mama has nothing to say about it.
A de facto sales feature of the...
It was in the brochure.
It wasn't in the brochure, but the man giving you the brochure might mention it. I went to the Titanic exhibition in Cape Town at the Waterfront about 3 years ago.
What did they have?
Dude, all kinds, and pulled up from the ocean floor, all barnacled and patinaed from being under the ocean for, you know, 100-odd years, and like, it was just absolutely mind-blowing to see so much stuff that had been down there for so long, so deep, that had been brought up and was still recognizable. And I mean, you could even use the cutlery, the crockery, it would probably give you a bit of a graze inside your mouth somewhere, but that was the worst unintentional pun of my life. But just incredible that they can get the stuff up and you can see it, and you get a real sense of the opulence and the luxury. And I've got replica Titanic first class cabin towels in my house.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they sell all kinds of souvenirs.
But I was wondering, because those they do bring up, these treasure hunters go down there and they find things from sunken ships and they try to sell them, and often they fetch very high prices. I would imagine Titanic memorabilia must be right near the top of the list of what people are prepared to pay for.
Well, especially for gold, yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think for a lot of people,
those tiles are about 200 rand each. And I was after all that nostalgia, I was ready to eat them up. But they're nice tiles. That being neither here nor there, James Cameron was also quite seriously involved in those expeditions in documenting it with those bubble submarines.
He set a record for most going down in the deepest depth.
Yes, we know what you mean.
Deepest depth in a craft. Because if you watch Blue Planet 2, they go about who's gone the deepest. Yeah, James Cameron's kind of there amongst history.
Oh, have you got a final verdict on Blue Planet 2? Is it as amazing as I was hoping it would be?
Gareth,
I haven't watched it yet.
It is rather amazing. But because it's stuff we don't really know, it's almost more technical than Planet Earth. Mm. Planet Earth, we see all the stuff, so we know of this, this, and that. Under the ocean, we have no idea. We literally have no idea. I think that's actually a line from the narration.
Yeah.
Ben, I also saw a rat on the side of the road yesterday, and William Nichols, says somebody on WhatsApp this morning. It was huge. I really hope we're not going to face a plague anytime soon.
Well, you remember how during the garbage strike, the great garbage strike of 2016, the rats almost got together and created a political party?
They did. They did create a political party that passed some legislation yesterday, or passed a motion in Parliament yesterday that's about to make land expropriation without compensation a reality. We'll talk about that in the five things you need to know next. I've got quite a lot to say about it. Someone says, I live in Durban close to a dam called Inanda. Around here we have 4-meter mambas. Now, jeez, that is bloody
so
terrifying.
Is that four mambas of 1 meter in length?
Yes, sure, God, you idiot. Yeah. Four meter long mambas.
Can a snake be 4 meters long? Yeah. Think about 4 meters. That's okay. That's two very tall people lying head to toe.
That's what a fully grown mamba after eating rats for 2 years can get to.
Cane rats.
Also, like, the color of the mambas influences how scary they are. The black ones are very, very hectic because they'll chase you.
They chase
you. Like the other ones, the green ones, whatever, they'll kind of, if you get close to where they are, you don't see them and you step near their nest or whatever, they'll bite you because you trespassed. A black one will hunt you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it'll
for sport.
And
its mates will bet.
I always explain to people that they can actually go up and use the bottom third of their body on the ground, and the other two thirds is in the air.
They bite you at face height.
They can be as tall as a human being, and that is particularly frightening.
I don't want to get this wrong, and I'm sure somebody can WhatsApp or whatever and give the exact reason, but its name, I think, comes from the inside of its mouth, the color of the inside of its mouth that you see, that's black. The rest of it's kind of a browny gray.
Soft gray.
It's brown on the bottom and a soft gray on the top. Yeah, I think it's because when you see that, you poked.
Yeah, then it's over. And it's also, I think those are neurotoxic. So it's the kind of thing that you go crazy
what
before you
die. Cytotoxin, neurotoxin.
And hemotoxin.
And hemotoxin. So the ones that make you bleed, the ones that make you rot, and the ones that make you mental.
No, mental's neuro, rot is cyto, that's tissue, and hemo is blood.
Mm.
I just love to know why there needs to be anything of living nature that needs to be that deadly and that horrible.
Evolution unchecked. Not enough predators. well, isolation.
You mentioned blood. They actually don't make you bleed. They coagulate your blood inside your vessels. Bleeding, yeah. So it does the opposite of thin your blood. It thickens your blood in globules, and then you obviously can't use it.
I mean, this is why, like, on an evolutionary level, so many people are terrified of snakes, because even though like a very small percentage of them are toxic or toxic enough to be a real threat, there are ones out there that can proper kill you. And before, like, the times of antivenins and that sort of thing, only very recently in our evolution have you been, if there's the right thing on hand, might survive certain snake bites. Previously, you were absolutely dead. Yeah. That's why, like, have you ever put anything sort of string-like in front of your cat? It, like, goes into full... It starts jumping up and down, folding itself in half,
because
doing somersaults and trying to get away. But it's almost a game, but it also looks a bit nervous. It's just pre-programmed into a lot of mammals' evolution to just chit yourself when you see a snake.
Absolutely. All right, listen, we've got to get into the five things you need to know this morning. So here some of them are. Mubs is not here today, so I'll handle this part. Even play the trumpet. Well, there's a lot of talk about what went on in Parliament yesterday. It appears to many people in South Africa that what the EFF and ANC were championing yesterday, expropriation of land without compensation, indicates something much more sinister going on, that the ANC and the EFF are now going to collaborate a lot more closely, since I predicted this. The reason the EFF exists is that Jacob Zuma threw out Julius Malema. The EFF was never about poor people or about land or about nationalizing banks or mines. It was always about finding a new political home for Julius, and that political home was only ever going to be temporary until he found it convenient to return to the ANC. And forget about the land expropriation. We can talk about that in a moment or two. Because when it comes to property rights, we have some of the most uneducated people in the world sitting in our parliament when it comes to understanding what it means to own something, what it means to have a title to something. And we'll get to that, and I know a lot of people are going to want to argue with me about it, and I'm happy to have those arguments. But the real issue here is, what value can the EFF add if they're not fighting the ANC?
0.0.
And where do the EFF fit into the political spectrum of South Africa if they aren't just an external ANC youth league and an external body to accommodate the very left of the ANC that doesn't feel it has a home in the ANC anymore? That's something to think about.
They got cooler outfits.
Yeah, that's it. They got berets.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's really the story for me, was that you're seeing a new kind of coalescing of support around ideas and ideology, as opposed to, you know, the kind of thing that we expected to happen now, which was that we want a government that works. And certainly Cyril Ramaphosa has promised that he wants to start getting a government to work, but that we will have to wait and see. I mean, the jury's going to be out on that for a long time.
But, like, call me cynical here, but does this not lead to rural unrest? Because if this is the general consensus that, okay, land will be taken without doesn't this mean that people are going to occupy land now because they go, oh, well, it's now the law because of what they saw in Parliament? I mean, obviously, it's a very loose interpretation, but this is what mobs do.
No, people just be shot if they try to take land.
Yeah, but
that's what happens in the world.
But to not realize that people who are mostly ignorant and uneducated, who will be rallied up by people like the EFF and BLF or whatever, that's what's going to happen now.
The EFF have said, I'm going to quote Julius Malema here, he's assured South Africans no one will lose their homes as a result of land expropriation without compensation. So there is an element of this that we need to actually sit down and be rational about. The worst thing you can do is to become emotional on an issue like this, because it will lead to chaos and stupidity. So here's the deal. The reason that we have the problems that we have with respect to land in this country isn't because white people landed here and just chased people off land and took it and claimed it for themselves. Property rights per se was an idea that was brought to this country by Europeans. Before that, you can argue that there was feudal law, that there were kings, that those kings ruled the land, and that they would allow peasant workers or peasant tribesmen or peasant farmers to occupy the land as long as they were useful to the king, and the king wanted tenure from that. So that's kind of how it worked. Again, understanding a history might be helpful here. And that was fine. What wasn't fine was that the land was then taken from some of these people. Again, a lot of this land was unoccupied, and some of the land was occupied by the San and the Khoi, who were increasingly forced into more inhospitable parts of the country as African tribes moved southward and westward and kind of forced the best land out of the hands of the Khoi and the San, who were the original occupants of that land. So you can go back into history and you can make a claim for anybody. But the fact is that history is the story of people conquering other people and taking the land by force. That's what England is. England used to be a land of people called Picts and Scots and Angles and Saxons. And a guy called William the Conqueror landed there in 1066 and declared that he was going to take it, killed the other king, Harold, with force, chased the Saxons into parts of the country that no one wanted to go, and subjugated them, also declared the language of England to be French. And nobody cares about history, but this stuff's important. And the king of England was William the Conqueror from that point on, and his descendant, Queen Elizabeth II, is still there as the ruler of England. She owns absolutely the land of England. And anyone who held a candle for the Saxons is crying in some corner or writing books like Tolkien did, which was essentially what he was really romantic about, was the idea of the original Angles and Saxons. Anyway, point being,
that's what hobbits are, right? They're old rural English folk.
Correct. So and before that, the Britons and so on. You can go back into history. I mean, eventually, you know, are we going to have someone trying to get their DNA as close as possible to Mrs. Pless so they can claim the whole of Krugersdorp? Who knows? The point is this, is that after that, people had to buy land and people had to show that they had title. Now, why is this important? Because since then, the governments that followed made absolutely sure they never gave black people title to their own land. In other words, they would, first of all, settle black people where they wanted them to settle. So there was forced settlement in certain areas and forced removals in others. It was part of the most painful story of what happened during apartheid, is that people weren't allowed to choose where they wanted to live. And if they were allowed to choose, they didn't ever get the title deed to that property anyway. So there's this idea that we could go back to some romantic sort of communal land ideal, which is impossible. And the white people who own the property think that if they bought the property, it's legitimately theirs, and there's a legal case for that. But this idea that everybody wants land is crazy, and certainly that everyone wants land for money, for reasons of money. It is helpful if you have land to be able to borrow against it. That's the basis of wealth. But it's also the basis of...
It's land and gold, right? Those are your two things you want to borrow against.
Yeah, and people who understand how property law works, that it is the entire fundamental basis for the economy, also know that you can't just willy-nilly take someone's stuff. If I can take your stuff, that means you can take my stuff too, with force. And if that's the kind of world you want to live in, you're living in William the Conqueror's world, which means that if you're conquered, you've just got to accept it.
Yeah.
You lost.
Or get Gandalf to come and help you and then make an arduous trek across the
middle
of Earth.
Well, we live in a society then where dog eats dog and it becomes violent, and that's not necessarily the way that people should behave in the 21st century. Anyway, for anyone who's very emotive about land, I can understand that you get carried away, that you think it's my land. I don't know if anybody can prove in every situation that the land is theirs or that it isn't theirs, but your best proof is a title deed. If you don't have that, you can prove maybe that your ancestors were buried there and dig them up and prove it by showing physical evidence. But this romantic notion that everybody in the world deserves a piece of land is outrageous. 2% of the world's population own 98% of the land in the world, full stop. Not just here in South Africa.
Doesn't the government have like loads and loads and loads of unoccupied arable land that belongs to them?
Some of it's arable, but yes, they own the majority of the land in this country.
Did I say unarable? I meant arable. They can farm it.
Yeah.
They could distribute land that's not being used.
I'm the one who said it's unarable. Some of it's unarable. But there are huge tracts of land. The largest landowner in South Africa is the government. And the government doesn't want to part with that land because the government knows that that land is a source of its own wealth. There are huge pieces of urban and rural land in South Africa that are owned by the government. And they don't ever talk about that, and they don't declare that when it comes to figuring out how much property is owned by whom. And you've got to ask yourself this. If the basis for someone wanting land back is that they want an economic foothold, a place where they can start to determine their own destiny, who could have a problem with that? No one. Particularly if you and your family have lived in a place for generations and you still occupy that place. What is preventing you from making that land yours legally? Because legal ownership of land is the basis of the economy. You need to do that. You need to be able to get your title deed. The only thing preventing that is the government itself. And let's not forget that when the government makes, and I'm talking about the entire legislature here, whether they voted for or against this motion yesterday, when the government takes something, it's not taking it to give it back to people. It's taking it for itself.
To keep it, Jim.
And it wants to make you its tenant. This is going backwards, not forwards. The whole idea of being free, of liberty, the idea espoused in the French Revolution by the middle classes, in America by ordinary patriots who didn't want to be run by England, remote control, who fought the War of Independence, the people who wrote the Declaration of Independence, understood that the first thing a man needs to do if he wants to assert himself as a private citizen is to own a gun and to own some land. Because if you own both of those, you can safeguard the possessions, your family, and that will give you a way to make money and to make yourself independent of the government. In other words, you won't rely on handouts from the government for the rest of your life. And to go against private property ownership is to go against freedom. In short.
Spot on.
There is no argument that is better than that that I've ever heard from the left.
But none of that happened in Parliament yesterday, did it?
Well, because it's all emotive and it's all about white people and black people and it's been simplified. And I'm so disappointed in politicians, and I exclude one person by name, and that person is Mosiwa Lekota. The rest of these politicians are playing at poor people, disenchanted people, unhappy and greedy and jealous people's feelings in order to try and get things done that will ultimately only benefit them. You've seen this before. Jacob Zuma used to talk about this stuff. All he wanted was to take it for himself. Don't for a minute believe that the ANC want to force through land expropriation without compensation because they care about you. Don't be an idiot. They want to take it from you to give to themselves. This is about kleptocracy. It's not about socialism. It's not about communal land. It's not about restoring things to how they were before the white man got here, which is ridiculous because we don't even have an objective view of how history happened in those days. The only history we have to go on is, in the case of black people, an oral tradition of history, in the case of white people, their version in
politicized version of history
on both sides.
So I'm guessing in the back of this conversation, Judas isn't coming in here anytime soon.
Oh, I want to have him in here. Yeah, I'll talk to him anytime.
Haven't you asked him already? Like, I'm sure you've mentioned at some point that there were a couple of near misses.
We had a conversation in January, and I said to him, he must come, and he said, cool, and I just haven't followed it up, so it's my fault. But also, there's a lot more to talk about now, so I think we must get him in here. Mm. Okay, nobody will ever own any land 100%. You always have to pay land taxes, water and electricity, sewerage, and so on. If you can't pay that stuff, it'll be taken back. Well, most people in this country who do own land don't really own it because the bank does.
Exactly.
So, again, you've got to think about why do you want to own land? I mean, a lot of people like to rent because they don't have to worry about when shit breaks. When you own the land, you have to keep fixing things. You have to keep investing in that property, maintaining it, paying for the services.
The land and, by implication, what's built on it.
Correct. So it's not all cut and dried. By the way, someone says, did you know that the movie Titanic, James Cameron made it a well hidden documentary? Okay, you know what? Please write this in English and then we can talk. I can't even read that. I don't know who sent that to me, but it's hardly discernible.
I think there was a documentary, basically.
There was a documentary about James Cameron going deep.
Yeah, James Cameron goes little, deep.
He basically put Jack and Rose as a Romeo and Juliet story on top of it to get the masses to watch it. The real story is actually all in the finer details in the background of that movie. Okay. Yeah. Sort of tried to make sense of that. Thank you.
One of my heroes, Corey Taylor, he's a huge movie buff. He's a guy from Slipknot, Stone Sour, and he writes books. And he loves movies. He has an immense movie collection and considers himself a huge movie nerd. He wants to be the person on the planet that never watched the movie.
Oh, yeah?
Because he saw an interview when it was coming out, when it was like, you know, it was going massive, that James Cameron said something along the lines of, eventually, you know, at the rate that it's, at the rate people are watching it, eventually every person on Earth will have seen this movie. And he was like, nope, not while I'm alive. So he's like seen every movie there is to see, every obscure movie that exists, like a movie nerd to the nth degree, but he won't watch Titanic.
In other stories, just quickly, because we've got to get to Ben and we're almost at 10-2. David Mabuza, Didi Mabuza, says allegations that he was linked to criminal activity amounted to nothing but a smear campaign. That's what he says. And we're still talking about the cabinet and who's in the cabinet, but Becky Cele was at the memorial service, or rather at a kind of a wake, I suppose, or a funeral service for those police men and women who were killed in Ngobo over the course of last week. A horrible story. And at least that minister is already on the ground doing what he said he would, which is to take policemen out of harm's way.
So a great meme about Becky Taylor's reinstatement is it like he's looking all stern and it says, now you can park your polo on the street again.
And then just quickly, the Oprah has called Trevor Noah's mom a badass warrior woman.
Oh, yes, Oprah. Okay, I'm with you. That all makes sense suddenly.
Yeah, she commented on Trevor Noah out of the blue. All right, we got to get to Ben's sport. Let's do that. But first, just in case you're interested in cryptocurrencies, we'll take a look at some of the major ones and where they're moving at the moment. And then Ben will give us the latest in the sport. We've also got some more news for you after that. And I'd like to take your calls. Your WhatsApps can come through on 0797482090. You can call us on 0861-555-189. All right, let's take a look. Bitcoin currently going at 10,921, so not too bad, up from yesterday. Ethereum at $884.13, and Ripple is at 0.94. That was after we spoke to Run yesterday, gone up slightly. Also Monero at $301. That's what you need to know. Here's Ben with the latest in his sport. Take it away, Ben.
So Roger Federer was the big winner last night at the Laureus Awards. You know, he was up for Sportsman of the Year along with Cristiano Ronaldo, Mo Farah, Chris Froome, Lewis Hamilton and Rafael Nadal. But he was the big guy, and who could really dispute this, because he won the Aussie Open, he won the Wimbledon Championship, he won Wimbledon without dropping a single set.
I got to ask you something. Why were Dan Nickel, Maps Mapuanyane and Genie D there? Well, what the hell were they doing?
Maps Mapuanyane is an international superstar celebrity. Dan Nickel does a lot of work for the Laureus Awards, and Genie D is Genie D.
Okay. I'll take your explanation.
3 out of 3, spot on. Sportswoman of the Year. Guess who won that, Gareth?
Serena.
Yes. Do you think that's a good call?
Sure.
Why?
Well, no, not this year, actually. She was mothering this
exactly.
year.
Exactly. She won the Aussie Open and then she became a mother. This is the Laureus Sports Awards, not the Laureus Mother Awards. Yeah. I know this is going to be this is very controversial of me to say this, because you cannot say anything against Serena. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of Serena, and I've always said like how incredible she is as an athlete. Not just a female athlete, but global sports person. But she won the Aussie Open. Costa Semenya, great year. Gabi Muguruza, great year. Alison Felix, great year. Katie Ledecky, Michaela Schifrin, they all did things for an entire year. I mean, I know it's great that Serena got past that whole Steffi Graf record and stuff, but ultimately she became a mom. That's a lifestyle personal choice. She didn't win any more tournaments after the Aussie Open, so I think that's one of those, like, you know, let's just see who's going to get the most cred for our award ceremony.
In other words, they're just looking for virtue.
There we go, Gareth, spot on, yeah. Team of the Year, well, basically it's always going to be a Mercedes, because what can Mercedes do every year that's the best thing they can do is win the F1 Constructors' Championship, Drivers' Championship, right? And they do that every single year because they got the best car. So how are they never not going to win this award? Francis Davis Cup team, who cares? Golden State Warriors, New England Patriots, who cares? New Zealand's sailing people and Real Madrid. No matter what they do, technically speaking, they can never beat Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to be poo-pooing the awards here, but I mean, this is on right. Breakthrough of the year, Sergio Garcia finally won a major golf championship. Fantastic. Comeback of the year, Roger Federer. Awesome. Really, really is. Because it was a great comeback, because he looked like he was dead and buried, and then suddenly he's now world number one again. So those were the big sort of the big winners last night from the Laureus Awards. And basically, as I was saying yesterday, it's how everyone who's fancy in sport all comes together, puts on smart clothing, and makes sport look like it's a really glamorous thing. But Roger Federer is great, so let's move on from there. The Aussies are here and raring to go against the South Africans. But do the Proteas have a good enough batting lineup? Well, no one knows. No one knows. But everyone, that's the one big question to which there are no answers other than Otis Gibson basically saying, okay, you guys go bat. Because right now, all we know for certain is that the Aussie pace attack, Mitchell Starc, Josh Hazlewood, Pat Cummins, are going to rip through the living crap out of anyone out of form right now. And then Nathan Lyon will throw up his off spin where you think you can score runs, but actually then you get out to him. So this Aussie attack is pretty much the big story right now. Who is Otis going to choose? Well, we'll find out tomorrow. They're playing in Durban from 10 o'clock tomorrow, the 1st of March. Yes, it's a new month, it's a new test series, and again, it's a bloody exciting time in SA cricket. Rusty Erasmus, he, as we all know, is now going to be the grand ruler, master, emperor of South African rugby. I didn't obviously get that title from media, I just made it up by myself. But he's in charge, he's director of rugby. And today,
I wish that was his real title.
It should be though, Gord, because
it would be great.
He's seen as the director of rugby. But he's also now going to become the BOC coach because, you know, Alistair Coetzee has been thrown out on his ass. So Rusty's already been doing coaching things. He's already watching England play in the Six Nations. He's already gone to Japan to suss out where the cool hotels are, where the guys are going to train, all that kind of stuff. The guy's thinking 2019. He's thinking World Cup. So he is very much 2019. So Rusty Erasmus's full title is Emperor, God, Emperor, Emperor again, Grandmaster, 2019 rugby.
His exalted grandmastership to you, Ben.
Wow.
His high Russiness, Rusty Erasmus, 2019 Grandmaster, High Priestess of SA Rugby.
How did he get there?
Well, he did really well in Munster in Ireland. Of course, he's an ex-player, so he's got that sort of cred towards him. He's just cool. You know, Rusty pulled a lot of tricks when he was younger as well. So all the Oaks dig him. And there he is. He is now in charge of SA Rugby. So today, SRA will come out and say, this is Rusty. Oh, by the way, he'll also be the coach and this and that and don't trust your what. Yeah, so that's rugby. Yesterday, I told you about Usain Bolt signing for a football team. Well, it was some bloody cheap PR trick crap. We all suck it in. So he isn't signed for Sundowns. Look, he's not going to sign for any professional team. He's signed for the Soccerade charity match. So basically, there's a charity match taking place at Old Trafford. Yeah, charity's great, Ben. Be more sympathetic. Yeah, no. This is crap. This is just stealing headline space, and it's clickbait, and it's bollocks. And
it's nice how Ben chastises himself for being a curmudgeonly dick, and we don't have to. It's like...
But he's quite balanced that way.
Yeah, he's learned. It's like, at least we know that he's absorbing it, and he's taking it in. I just feel like we're making progress, Ben. Thanks.
But guys, don't you think it's a really shit story? It's like all this hype around the fact that he's going to now transition towards football, which we knew wasn't going to be ultimately serious. But then all these other things come up, like definitely signing for a team, making a big announcement, and then it's just some... charity.
How dare they? How dare Usain Bolt play a charity football match, presumably for some great cause, if they're going to trick you into thinking that he's signing for a real team for a couple of weeks?
Exactly.
In order to build the profile of this charity thing and make it more successful as a way to get money for charity. Screw them, I say.
Damn right.
He should sign permanently for a side and play three seasons just on principle.
Yeah. Well, there we go. See, now you're on board. So remember in the Rio Olympics, the SA athletes were absolutely embarrassed by being sent out there in spinnakers from a cheap yacht. Dreadful, dreadful, seven sizes too big tracksuits.
Sure.
Well, yesterday they had an actual unveiling of their new tracksuits for the Commonwealth Games, and I tell you what, everyone's clothes fit.
Oh, really?
Oh, Gareth.
That's a relief.
It really was. I mean, this is probably the big story of the day, is that Italian clothing giant Lotto Sport Italia is now the kit sponsor for the South African athletes. So they look like actual people of the modern 21st century. I'm so excited about
this. I'm guessing they had shitty tracksuits before, Ben.
Did you not see the Rio Olympics?
No.
Good. Where the hell have you been?
Jesus, they were the worst.
They were the worst.
They looked like bags.
Dreadful. It was just embarrassing.
I don't take 2 years every out of it, two weeks out of God, every 4 years national, to care about sports. No one ever cares about otherwise.
Good. It was a national disaster.
Okay.
It was an actual national disaster.
How bad were they?
So bad. I'll find your picture.
You spend the rest of your day Googling these tracksuits, and you will look at.
Can they be worse than those hats that the books, the caps that the books had to wear worse. That time Odd Matthews butchered the national anthem?
Well, they always wear those because it's like a school tradition that got taken. No, those tracksuits at the Rio Olympics were so diabolical. Horrendous. They were just.
I'm going to Google it now.
See, now you got me all angry.
Gareth.
they look like obese Ninja Turtles.
They look like a tent that's got a head hole.
Exactly. They were tents with head holes. That's exactly what they were.
Weren't they designed by the Guptas?
Well, there was a dodgy deal in there somewhere. And, let's not get into those guys that I've really been mad about. So, yeah, Commonwealth Games, 34 days away. And the South African athletes will look the part. See, finish with a good story, Gord. That's how you do
uplifting.
Sport. That's how you do it.
I'm uplifted.
That's pretty much all we have time for today. But tomorrow is Thursday, and I've got an F1 special for you on The Bounce Show because it's March tomorrow, and March is the start of F1. So, as you know, I'm becoming more balanced, and I'm giving you everything you need and exciting, interesting stuff as
didn't
well.
Didn't you just rubbish it because Mercedes-Benz win everything, and
yes,
what's
exactly,
the point? And
that's exactly
no,
what I did.
That's going to be the screw Ben's F1, it's not competitive.
Good. Ben's not going to fix the sport. He's just going to tell you how messed up it is. At least he'll pay some attention, which he hasn't done.
You didn't even know what the tracksuit dilemma was, and now you want to give me shit about other stuff.
I depend on you. I know now. That's where you came in and informed me.
Yeah.
All right. Here are a couple of things that have come up. Those South African celebs are at the Sports Awards because they're South African Mercedes-Benz ambassadors. Mercedes-Benz sponsors the awards, so marketing and PR. Clint from the Val. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, Clint, that applies to MAPS, I think. But yeah, Dan does a lot of work for the Laureus things because he's good friends with Johan Rupert. Wow. And as, again, Jeannie D is Jeannie D. She goes everywhere because she's amazing.
Hey, Gareth, what percentage of land is owned by tribal leaders and kings? Well, in the case of KwaZulu-Natal, all of it, all tribal land belongs to King Goodwill Zwelithini, and you live on it by his grace. So it's feudalism. Number two, you never own land. You own the title to land, and this varies by country. In some countries like the U.S., you own the mineral rights and the oil under the land as well. In South Africa, you don't. Only having a secure title gives wealth. Landfill title is not secure, then you struggle to borrow against it. Dave B. Thank you, Dave. That's a very good point on all of those. So there's so much that needs to be discussed around this. And I would like to know if anybody who's in the EFF and has read their manifesto and has actually seen what it is they want to achieve by land expropriation without compensation. I want to know how they feel about that land being taken away from hardworking black people in this country, because that would be the gain and the loss. You know, that the EFF says all land will be taken away and the state will own it all, and they will then decide what to do with it. Which sounds to me like the worst idea ever, considering the state owned Eskom, Prasa,
exactly.
SABC, SAA,
give
Transnet.
It to the state.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
God's sake.
If you want something run badly, let the state control it. So I don't understand why the EFF suddenly believe the state would be able to run all of that when they've spent the last 5 years, 4 years of their existence, the EFF, showing how the state can't run anything properly.
Literally being opposed to the state.
Yeah. So
and critical of the state, yeah, and walking out on anything the state do.
They speak with forked tongue. And again, I'm not surprised because they're politicians. But I don't know how they think this is going to work suddenly. Or they think that we're completely persuaded by their very, very shallow arguments. Anyway, we'll get stuck into some news in a moment or two. I'd like to hear your thoughts and opinions. It's Wednesday, 28th of Feb.
This is CliffCentral.com.